This is Erin Blanding, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Raquel Bellio. To get started, we could just talk about your research and possibly what impact you hope your work has on your field.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm a sociologist of technology. I do research on disabled users, on how they access public transit. That was the way that I kind of started thinking about the world around me, is through the lens of infrastructures. And I became really curious about what makes an infrastructure work or not work for specific people. So the first case study that I ever embarked upon was researching how wheelchair users get around the public transport system in London. And what I thought was going to be, let's say, a relatively straightforward scenario of, well, disabled people just can't use public transport systems. What came to the front as I did the work was that wheelchair users and disabled users of infrastructures are constantly doing really intricate building work. They come up with extremely creative solutions to be able to access spaces and access networks in ways that a lot of non-disabled people would never have imagined. And at the end of the day, what has come to the front is that this type of creative day-to-day ad hoc problem-solving work actually impacts our infrastructures in really interesting ways and pushes them forward and molds them in new and unexpected ways. And when I started doing this work, I guess I didn't really know what I wanted to get out of it besides my PhD, perhaps. And slowly it started becoming clear that working on this intersection of the field called science and technology studies and disability studies is a really liberatory space to work in, because I get to speak about marginalized people and marginalized bodies and how technologies and science have worked towards marginalizing particular people and particular bodies. And also demonstrate that this isn't a sad story at all times, because people are active every single day and are coming up with creative solutions for marginalization. And it's working in those interstices that really create new and exciting futures for everybody.
Wow, that's a really interesting, those are really interesting intersects to think about. And I'm wondering, you know, what impact have COVID-19 and the Black Lives Matter movement had on your research?
Yeah. So I guess a lot of different types of impact. On a more personal level, I'm Brazilian and I'm an immigrant. So most of my family is in Brazil. And partly due to that, but also partly due to professional interests, I've started thinking about my next research project in Brazil, which is going to be on the infrastructures of big science and big scientific facilities. So this summer, I was supposed to go to my new field site in Brazil and start some exploratory work. And of course, COVID has put a very quick stopper on those plans. And also when seeing my family, which has been extremely difficult for me. As far as the Black Lives Matter movement goes, it's had extraordinary impact in my day-to-day life in terms of my activism and the work that I see myself doing in letter writing and participating in protests. But I realized in the past 2 weeks that it's actually completely reshifted the plans that I had around this project on big science facilities in Brazil, and especially in the Global South. Because for the longest time, I thought that what I was going to do is just sit there and think about, oh, how are these infrastructures built and who builds them and how is their maintenance done and who does that maintenance? And as soon as I started sitting down with a lot of new literature written by Black scholars, I realized that to do that without a critical race theory lens was to not give the full picture, because Brazil, like the United States, is a country that has very clear distinctions on class and race divides around who does what types of work. and what types of work are valued in society. And I think that it, with just a little bit of research, it'll be evident that these big science facilities that are often prized as being intellectual hubs of the global South are spaces where white people get a lot of credit, but it's Black and brown bodies and Black and brown people who have built them and do the work of maintenance every single day and help these facilities continue to do the work that they're capable of doing. So that's one of the hypotheses that I've been working with, and Black Lives Matter and the Black Lives Matter movement and Black scholars have really opened my eyes to doing justice to that type of analysis as well.
Awesome. I'm wondering what excites you most about the uprising happening today?
Yeah, a lot of things excite me. So one of the insights that have come that has come to me from my work is that it is marginalized people doing the work that craft new possibilities and new futures for everybody. And what really excites me about the movement and the uprisings right now is that it feels like for the first time people are seeing actual new futures come to the forefront and imagining them collectively. So it doesn't feel like it's just science fiction. It doesn't feel like it's Octavia Butler or Ursula Le Guin writing about different worlds, or Adrienne Marie Brown talks a lot about the need for science fiction and imagining new futures, and how the writing of science fiction is the imagining of possibilities and possible futures. And these uprisings feel like they're really big steps towards those new futures, and that excites me.
I agree. You're a researcher, and I'm wondering, based on, you know, your experience, what do you think is the first step in making STEM more welcoming to people of color?
So a big question, right? because I teach in a polytechnic institute. I'm a professor at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, and one of the things that I realize in teaching in a STEM facility, but also being a sociologist and teaching in the humanities department, is that a lot of times questions around politics and race and identity and gender and sexuality is kind of pushed into the humanities as if it were the remit of the humanities. So STEM as fields get to become weirdly, I loosely use the word protected here, from having to deal with the messiness. And one of the things that science and technology does as a field is it has lifted this veil of neutrality from the sciences and from technologies and mathematics to show that there's a lot of community work that goes into developing knowledges, and the sciences are spaces of politics as well. So I think one of the ways in making STEM more welcoming to people of color and to immigrants and to people who have been historically marginalized is to no longer pretend that we can shove these discussions only into the humanities. I think the teaching of computer science needs to be inflected with the work that computer sciences does in algorithm building as world building. We're developing very specific ways of framing the world when we develop an algorithm. And that doesn't come from the ether. That doesn't come from nowhere. That's coming from very specific social expectations and social prejudices. So to teach STEM more equitably and to have higher retention, I think, in the STEM fields is going to require a rehaul of STEM education in a way that allows for this messiness to really come into play in the fields and to contend with that messiness. Be aware that when we're teaching sciences, we are teaching often things that have come to us through racial histories of experimentations, that we are teaching things that were often researched by rich white men in the United Kingdom in a process of colonialization. And to erase that history is to do that science a disservice.
And my final question is, what advice could you give a young person of color navigating your field?
Right. So I say this, and I think it's important to highlight to listeners. I'm Brazilian. I'm an immigrant, but also I'm a white Latina. And I think that any advice that comes from me needs to be taken with, that knowledge and that contextualization that I've grown up in a very privileged context and with a very privileged family of European descendants. So the advice that I give is going to come especially from being an immigrant and having done my entire education from high school through to undergrad, through to my master's and PhD, and also my current work. It's all been done as an immigrant, and also as an immigrant with significant privileges of being a visa holder and now a green card holder. But I think that one of the advices that I would give is to seek out mentors, really seek out the people who you feel provide you a space where you can ask questions and you can ask for advice, and that are people that feel like care and solidarity belong in higher education, and that will be able to give you advice that isn't just about scarcity and abundance and making you fear that you need to be constantly competing. I always think about mentors as people that are going to be able to coax the best out of you in the spirit of abundance. And those are the people that will encourage you to seek peers out and develop working groups with one another and collaborate on projects with your friends. And as soon as you find that space, I think that you start to be able to breathe in higher education institutions. So really it is about finding like in a lot of ways and finding kin and making kin with other people who are able to just kind of coax you out of your shell and who are able to protect you in the ways that you're going to need protecting in higher education. Because unfortunately, our institutions still are contending with racial histories and a racial past. And I think it's going to be a long time until we really, really fix that in higher education.
And I'm wondering, is there anything else that I haven't asked about that you would like to share?
I think I'd like to share the success of ICE rescinding their new regulation regarding visa holders in the country who would have had to either go back home or to re-enroll in another institution if their current institution was only offering online classes. I think that's a big victory, but to remember that was all couched on a very specific discussion around the financial repercussions of that regulation, right? They were scared of the amount of students that would return home and the economics behind it all, as opposed to thinking about the very real human impact. So I'd urge listeners to remember that a just society is one that welcomes everybody and provides everybody with equal access to happiness and to different opportunities in life, and that includes immigrants too. So hopefully we all get to continue in the struggle of building a fairer and more just society.
I'm very excited to see where all these conversations push us. So I appreciate you joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Erin.
Awesome. So this has been Erin Blanding, and I spoke with Dr. Raquel Felio for People Science, and thanks for tuning in.